99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterbacks just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in three.
Happy Thursday, Birds, and welcome to yet another edition of the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, joined by a very special guest at the top of the hour, Redbird guard Jordan Davis. Jordan, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Last night, with an exhilarating 81-78 win, I was on the sideline for that one, and I just saw pure emotion on all your guys' faces. It was exhilarating, and I can only imagine what a win like that feels for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they got us early on in December. We just wanted to return the favor with another game winner. Shout out Johnny. But, we want to keep it rolling now with the dubs.
I will say, I was sitting there and just, like, right on the sideline, and I saw you specifically kind of go up to the Belmont bench, kind of give them a little bye-bye, like, see you later. Was there something going on there? Like, was it just the fact that what happened earlier in the month against Belmont? Or, like, what can you explain that situation? You don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm open book, like I said. But, emotions were high. You know, it was a big game for us, and they were kind of talking a little stuff during the game, before the game. So, you know, only seemed right to send them home and wave goodbye.
It was awesome to see. And I bet coming off a win like that, the outlook's got to be super positive going forward. Can you kind of, like, break us through that and kind of just, like, how the locker room feels right now, especially going into a huge day that is Saturday with Dunk Collins Day?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've had a tough little stretch these past couple months, losing a lot of close games. So to win in that style of play in a close game like that versus a very good Belmont team, you know, was really good for us. We want to keep that momentum going into Saturday. Obviously, a big day for Doug. You got the new court, so emotions are going to be high. It's going to be a great atmosphere for the fans and Redbird Nation, so we want to get a dub to put the cherry on the top.
And then I just need to hear about, what are your thoughts on the court?
I think the court looks really good. You know, the style of the Illinois State in the middle of the Redbird, it's really cool. You got Doug's signatures really big on the other side, and I like the red as well.
Yeah, and then so it's good vibes right now, and I'm always the one that tends to bring it down, but I want to hear your thoughts on the situation, because Bowden and Brandon became official redshirts last season, so there's always kind of questions on if they're going to be inserted in the lineup. So, like, what's the mentality knowing that this is going to be the crew going forward, and what are your thoughts for the boys that aren't going to be here this season?
Yeah, no, obviously it's tough to lose guys like Brandon Lee with their experience. You know, they're both seniors, have a lot of experience playing college basketball, but I think the mentality we've had this year is just, you know, next man up, and the guys in the locker room, we all have trust in each other, and I know that any guy who gets his numbers called is going to step up and make a big play.
And also, you're, as one of the older guys on this team, you've kind of transformed into a leader, especially to the younger guys. So how has your role as a leader developed into your game also on the court?
Yeah, obviously, I've had a lot of experience playing college basketball, you know. I just try to give my advice, see what I'm seeing. And some of the younger guys, you know, go through their ups and downs, you know, and I just try to be a leader on the team and, like, you know, try to motivate them and challenge them to play better. And they do. You know, guys respond well on this team.
Kind of going throughout this year, I feel like we've seen huge development out of you. And it's been clear, like, it's been super fulfilling to watch as well. What can you kind of, like, break down your development throughout this year and how you feel like you've kind of stepped up, especially now getting consecutive starting reps in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I had a tough little stretch to start the year. I wasn't getting the playing time that I wanted, but Coach P and the rest of the coaching staff challenged me, and I think it helped me a lot, and it got me to where I am now, so I just have to keep playing how I've been playing.
And then is there a specific coach or something? Coach said, like, the one of the assistants helped motivate this kind of character change we saw in Jordan Davis?
Yeah, I would say Jason Slay. Me and him have gotten close in these past 2 years, and he's my individual coach that I work out with all the time, and he's just always in my ear. The rest of the coaching staff as well, like Coach Dockage, Coach Judson, but Slay in particular has always, like, been in my ear and been a guy who's always challenged me and try to motivate me to be the person I am today.
And I want to talk about the stretch of games that are coming up. I know you don't want to look past your opponents because Valparaiso is going to be tough, but it just gets tougher after that. UIC just had a massive, massive win against Bradley last night. Northern Iowa was tough, and then you go against Drake, who you guys had a close game as well. Like, what's kind of the mentality heading into the stretch? Like, do you think this is, like, kind of your guys' chance to make a statement in the Valley?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we obviously want to take it one game at a time. You never want to look past an opponent, but that's the thing about this conference. You know, anybody can get beat, speaking of, like, UIC and Bradley. But That's the conference for you, the MVC. Every game is going to be a challenge, so we're looking forward to it, though.
And then I kind of – let's just go back to the game that happened last night, because I feel like we brushed off it too quick. I mean, the Belmont game was incredible. Can you just break down the last minute from your perspective of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of tough shots hit. You know, I know Chase hit a little hook shot, and then number three from Belmont hit a tough shot as well. But we wanted to close the game out earlier. I think we should have put it away earlier to start the second half. But, you know, they kept scrapping. And that's the type of league this is. You know, everyone's going to give you your best fight. But I'm just glad we came out with the W.
It could have been put away after the second Landon Wolf posterizer of the day.
I was going to ask about that.
That was big time. You know, shout out to Landon too. Yeah, that was a two great dunks he had, and that kind of got us going. And it was a good momentum changer.
What were your thoughts on that technical? Because in my eyes, like at that moment with a minute left in the game, like you know, you guys are just going back and forth scoring on one another. I feel like at least from a viewer perspective. I just feel like that's the wrong call at that moment with a minute left. Maybe if it happened with like 10 minutes left in the second half, but I don't know. What was your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I know he really didn't want to get the technical, but honestly, like, you know, like in that type of situation, I probably would have done the same thing, you know, just scream with excitement. And yeah, but I think I'm just glad we got the W because it probably would have been looked at as like, you know, why is that like a controversial call or whatever, but I'm just glad we got the dub, honestly.
I mean, I don't want to ask like a more like philosophical question, get too deep about it, but like, do you kind of think basketball's kind of going towards a direction where like you can't really have emotion anymore?
I would say so. It's tough, you know, you can't really get in some guy's face like how they used to back in the day. Like, they refs kind of shy away from that competitive nature guys show during the game, and emotions are high, but you know, I hope it's not going towards that direction you just said.
Other than the Landon Tech, it feels like the refs kind of had a big impact on that game all night. How do you guys kind of deal with that, especially when calls don't seem to be going your way and they seem to be favoring Belmont? Like, from a bench or when you're on the court itself, like, how do you deal with that? Or the team itself as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about it in the locker room, you know, if there's any problem with, like, the referees, if they're not calling something, if you know, guys are getting abused, like, offensively or even defensively, we go straight to Coach P. We let Coach P handle it. That's his advice, and he's done a great job of that, I think. I'm hoping he doesn't get a technical foul for it, but he has our backs. That's the good thing.
And especially in a time in a game where you make a big shot, then everything changes so quickly. How do you really feel that you need to keep your poise in that game and not, like you said, not let your emotions get to you and try to just stay on defense, stay on your own tasks, and stay with your matchups?
Yeah, you know, in a game like that, you know, it's a close game. With a minute left, it was like a tie game, or we were up by like four or something. But you just want to play at a possession at a time, you know, not worried about the time and score, just, you know, worry about now, like stay in the present.
Especially when Johnny hits a big shot like that and you have 10 seconds to get back down the court and you guys just got to make a stop. Obviously, you let up two shots, great stops on defense, and obviously got to seal the win. But it's got to be tough just trying to lock back in. Like, you see Johnny hit the big shot that could be the game winner, but still you got to, like, get right back into it right away.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a big shot by Johnny, and obviously I was screaming with excitement in my mind, but I knew there was 10 seconds on the clock, so I know I had to run back and, you know, get a stop, and luckily we did.
Looking towards, like, the whole year as it's been, what are some of the, like, the biggest positives that you think that you've been able to take away from this team, as well as some things that you guys think that you can fix going forward to, you know, make a good run game by game and even potentially into the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament?
Yeah, no, one thing that I see positive about this team is we can compete with anybody in this league, you know, from top to bottom. I think our coaches read us a stat the other day. We've lost by like four or less points to like the top four teams in the league. So that just shows, you know, we can compete with anybody. I would say something that we still need to work on is obviously our defensive, our defensive side of the ball, where we just need to, like, you know, shut guys down, you know, not let them score like 70 to 80 points a game. And I feel like we also need to, you know, put guys down when we're up with, like, a big league, like, versus Belmont. We know, I think we were up by, like, 14 with, like, 10 minutes to go in the game. You know, we just have to close games out like that and not let them come back.
And another thing, obviously, you being one of the older members of the the crew. What has been some of your favorite developments out of the younger guys as you kind of lead this Redbird team going into the future?
Yeah, I'm super excited about Johnny and Chase's development in the past year, going from freshman to sophomore. And, you know, those guys show so much poise to be sophomores, and I'm really proud of them, the way they've handled this season so far. And I'm also proud of the freshmen, too, like Cade Norris, Jack Daugherty. Those guys are going to have bright futures in this program.
And as somebody that's older, you've kind of been through tournaments. You've been through tougher games like that. When you're approaching a time like this, when it's still not time for tournament time, but you're getting there, how do you tell your team that you need to lock in more?
Yeah, I think around college basketball now, these are like kind of the dog days. You know, we're halfway through our conference season, and some teams, you know, let up, some teams buckle down, and I think that's what we're trying to achieve, is, you know, buckle down, take it one game at a time, one possession at a time, and, you know, just go on a little win streak here.
Something we love to do on the show whenever we bring on an athlete is do some fun questions. You know, it was all about basketball, the X's and O's, but we want to know a little bit more about Jordan Davis, the person, obviously. So a question that I have for you is, what is your go-to pregame meal or snack?
Ooh. Pregame snack, I'd probably say I always eat trail mix right before the game in the locker room. My pregame meal, we usually have something catered from Hy-Vee, usually like something pasta-wise, like, you know, meatballs or chicken Alfredo.
Does it ever get old?
A little bit. But, you know, I'm not going to complain. It's free food. But another pregame meal I also try to stick to is Chipotle.
Okay.
I love Chipotle. Always.
It's good. What's the go-to? Burrito bowl?
Burrito bowl, man. Oh. You know, get everything on that. You know, steak, chicken. Put some little veggies on it and some cheese and queso.
So we're going to be talking to NBA later, so, like, I need to know from you, what's, like, your NBA hot take that you always stand on?
Oh. A hot take right now that I have probably is, I think OKC will go to the finals.
I've been on that.
Yeah, that's not ridiculous. That's not ridiculous.
Okay, I got another one. let's see. I think, got me on the spot. I think, Jimmy Butler will come back.
Ooh,
that's a good one.
Now we're to Miami?
No, to Chicago.
Chicago. That would be awesome.
I know we're supposed to get a rebuild. If we get Jimmy, I mean.
You guys are all Bulls fans?
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Since you're from Wisconsin, are you a Packers fan or a Bears fan?
I'm actually neither. I'm a Philly fan, baby. Right,
that must be nice.
Shout out Philly, man.
Trust me, we're all rooting for him.
Yeah, I like it. I think
we've had enough of the Chiefs. Do you have any superstitions?
I do, but I've always been told, you know, you got to keep your superstitions close.
Okay.
To yourself. 100%.
Yeah. But especially, yeah, like, I just, like, back in the day, like, whenever I would go on a win streak in baseball, it was like, we got to do the same routine every single day. But I understand, like,
I'll give you one that I used to do in high school. I don't do it anymore, but I'd always put on my left shoe first.
Okay.
I hear that one a decent amount.
And then when it comes to, like, practices, who's allowed on aux and then who's just not allowed on aux on the team?
Okay, I like this one. Who's always allowed on the aux? I would give Chase Walker or Bowden Scumberg the aux. You know,
okay.
Who's not allowed on the aux? I'd probably have to say Dalton Banks.
That's my dog. What's Dalton be playing?
You know, I'm not a big country fan. Like, don't hate me. I don't really have a problem with country. It's just not my flavor. And, you know, Dalton Banks is a big country fan, as long as with Johnny and some other guys. But, you know, Dalton's gotten the aux a couple of times, and I wasn't really feeling it. He's still my dog, though. I still love him. But.
So this doesn't have to go with just being at ISU, but what's your favorite basketball memory, like, of all time? It could be grade school, high school. It could be anything.
Oh, that's a good one. I'd probably say when I was at Wisconsin, we won a Big Ten title at home versus Purdue off a game winner. Shout out Chucky Hepburn. But that was probably my favorite moment. And to share that with my teammates, obviously, and my twin brother, that was a big special moment for my basketball career, I'd say.
What about at ISU? What's been the top moment?
Oh, ISU. I would say my favorite moment so far is probably yesterday. That was a really good game, and I don't have a lot of love for Belmont. So, and
it was clear. Yeah, I saw it.
You saw after the game. So that would probably be my favorite moment so far. And I know we're gonna have a lot of other ones that will be my favorite, but I would say just the win last night.
And this is my final question. So I talked to Kendall Lewis last season. He told me his favorite memory is Coach Pete, and he put dog bones across the locker room so you guys like dogs. So I'm wondering, do you have like a favorite story from Pete that we don't know about?
Oh, man. The dog bones one is pretty good. I would probably that's probably up there. Another one is I would say he had I can't remember who we lost to. We lost to somebody who we shouldn't have lost to by like 4 or 6 points. And it was the week of Bradley, so last week he had on these posters, just the word fight in red and black, and they had them all over the locker room, all over the doors. And what was funny is I was going to the bathroom in one of the stalls, close the door, doing my business, and I look up and I see the poster fight. I'm like, really, man? Like,
in the bathroom?
Yeah, so that just shows you how dedicated Coach P is. So I like it, though.
What a guy. Before we go, for Redbird fans, trying to get them out to CEFQ, I know they already got the jerseys, the Doug Collins jerseys, but try and convince Redbird's fans, give them a sales pitch. Why should we be coming out to see Redbird basketball the rest of the season?
Chase Walker and Johnny Kinziger, that's what I say. You know, two of the best guys in the NBC in my eyes. But also just, you know, we're going to put on a show, and obviously we want to get a dub. It'll be a great atmosphere. Obviously Doug Collins will be there, the GOAT. So if anyone wants to see basketball, Richmond, definitely go check it out.
Doug Collins Day on Saturday starting at 3:50 against Valparaiso. You can see Jordan Davis and the Redbirds on Saturday. Jordan, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be talking some more Redbird men's basketball here on 103.3 WZND. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, and a huge, huge special thanks to Jordan Davis for joining the show. What an awesome interview with a great guy. Just went super well, and he was super awesome.
Yeah, just incredibly well-spoken, fun to talk to, and just his whole journey to where he is now has just been a fun watch, so I'm happy for him.
We've had, we already kind of talked about it in the interview, but we could touch on it a little bit more, the X's and O's of the game last night, which was just super awesome. We have a couple clips to play as well from the game itself, but just a ton of fun and an 81-78 win that really just felt like not necessarily a turning point, but I think to do it at home against a team that beat you earlier in the season on a game-winning shot, like, it feels good to give it back to them.
Yeah, absolutely, because Belmont, they're up there in the upper echelon of the Valley Conference. They're always making they tend to make appearances in March. They have just been incredible. So that was just such a big win for Illinois State, because I know the vibes are high, but, like, it was not the greatest performance in the world against Bradley from either side. So getting a bounce-back performance against one of the best teams in the Valley was just so crucial for the squad.
We talked about it a little bit when we were talking with Jordan Davis. Johnny Kinzinger hit yet another game-winning shot. It wasn't exactly a buzzer beater, but still a game-winning shot nonetheless. Let's hear more from Johnny Kinzinger after his game-winning shot on Wednesday afternoon.
You know, just trying to make the right play. Whoever open, take the shot, you know, that type of mindset.
In the post-game press conference, and man, it has just been awesome really to see Johnny Kinzinger and how he continues to develop. You heard Jordan Davis say it. What's the biggest reason to come out to CEFQ for the rest of the season? He said Johnny Kinzinger and Chase Walker. Didn't even say the rest of the team, as the rest of the team has been playing well as well. But man, it is just really nice to have a guy that they can go to, especially Kinzinger, who just he's been, you know, all MVC yet again.
Yeah, I think you could say this about any sport, but on your team, if you expect to win big games, you need a closer. You need a guy that can just put the ball in their hands and they're going to make a play for you. And that's what Johnny's been even since he was a freshman. He's developed so well being that guy that could just take the big shot. So it's exciting to see that, and I hope that he could keep that going on the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I can't stress enough how bad it was ISU finally closed out one of these games, because it's been one of their weaknesses this season. You look at the buzzer beater against UNI, you look at not being able to finish against Bradley, and then one more team that's just slipping off my tongue, but it's just like, it always just comes down to these moments. It seems like ISU was not able to get over the hump, but last night they did, and I just think that's so crucial for this team, knowing that, yeah, when it comes down to clutch time, we can perform, we can win close games when we need to.
Craziest part about it yesterday was obviously ISU got the ball back, which was likely to be their last offensive possession, and if you didn't watch the game, it actually, the play that they were trying to run ended up failing. They lost the ball, almost committed a turnover. Chase Walker was thankfully able to get it back. I think they get it out to Banks, and then Banks got it to Kinzinger. He went to work to pull the deep fadeaway three-pointer to win the game. And we have a little clip from Coach Peden here on how they were able to execute on a play that got screwed up at first.
But for them to do that on what would have been our final offensive possession, you know, you don't always see that. I thought Johnny handled it well. I think the, you know, important thing there was he had a little bit of space. It wasn't like he was coming off of a ball screen and that happened. So, yeah, I thought we improvised, we played, and ended up, boy, Johnny made an unbelievable shot.
Honestly, just hearing from Coach Peden there, it's just really nice that a play that really exploded in their face, they were still able to end up making something out of it. And it kind of goes back to what we've kind of talked about all year with this team, is it feels like they haven't been able to close out games. And it feels like luck kind of went their way, that they were able to get that lucky bounce over to Chase. And, you know, once again, he says it. They got it out to Johnny, and Johnny was able to make a play, and it worked out perfectly for them.
Yeah, I mean, being able to improvise in basketball is just so crucial, because, like, you can drop the biggest play, but if it goes off the rails, what are you going to do? It's like when you're driving in the car and you see a random object come your way, like, how are you able to react in time and avoid the accident? In Illinois State, they were just able to do that last night. The play blew up, but Johnny Kinzinger proved that he's Johnny Hemziger, and Kinzinger continued to do Kinzinger things.
Yeah, I think a lot of that just also shows that Peden keeps his team very poised in difficult situations, even though they have a lot of trouble closing out games, because they had the ball in their hands, they knew what they were going to run. It didn't work out well, but they still got the ball to their guy. And having a guy like that, you could just trust. A lot of it goes with trust around your whole team. So it seems like this team really trusts each other a lot, and their chemistry is built a lot throughout this whole year.
One player I do want to mention, who I just think has been so pivotal to the Redbirds' success this entire year, has been Landon Wolf and what his contributions that he's been able to do. You know, he's been team high in score for multiple games. He plays super well on defense as well as on offense. And yesterday just had two incredible posters. I mean, it brought the stadium down damn near. Like, it was incredible to see this. And we talked about it a little bit with Jordan. There was a big call at the end of the game there that ended up leading to two Belmont points when Landon Wolf ended up hitting a poster and kind of got in one of the Belmont players' face. I think it was a bad call. We talked about it with Jordan. I know you're probably going to agree with it as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with it more. It's just, I kind of hate that basketball is going in this direction. Like, as you said, like, how do you expect these players to be robots? Like, you just created a highlight reel play. Of course you're going to be excited. If you're not excited, do you even, like, love the sport of basketball? So I just think Landon Wolf, as Jordan Davis said, just did everything, or did what everybody else would have done, and celebrated it in the moment.
In the post-game press conference, we heard a little bit more from Coach Peden talking about that crucial call at the end of the game and how Landon approached it with Coach Peden.
You know, we don't beat ourselves, generally speaking, in those moments. And, you know, Landon was just a little excited there after his dunk. And I know it's a moment he'd like to have back, but nobody felt worse than him. He was the first guy to come up to me right after we sang the fight song, and he was apologizing almost with tears in his eyes. I said, man, listen, we won the game. Go celebrate with your teammates. And it's a learning experience, you know. He's an emotional guy, and I love that about him. I love that about him. I saw some real moments out of him tonight that, you know, I like the way he attacked the rim. And I was proud of him and proud of all those guys.
I think, like, the biggest thing that I take away from that clip is the fact of, not only does Landon already seem like a leader in year one at ISU, but really just even the way that Jordan speaks about the team. Like, you know, they've been through a lot this year, and it feels like no matter what happens, whether it's a win or loss, they're sticking together. And I think under Coach Peden, you would like to see more wins. But the fact that even though it's year three, and I feel like the biggest thing of it all is he's building a culture that's built on family and, like, respect for one another, even when you bring in new transfers. And, you know, especially, like, after a win like last night, like, you could just tell from Jordan's point of view, like, it's super fulfilling when the ball goes your way, for say, and that's just kind of what Coach Beaton's trying to build.
Yeah, I hate to give this team some love, but I'm going to talk about the Detroit Lions for a second, because when they brought Dan Campbell in, they just were not winning games, but yet people were saying, like, oh, I see something with this team, he's building an identity, and that's something this team just never had, and I feel like that's kind of what Coach Beaton's implementing right now, where he's building an identity, he's building a culture with this roster, and yeah, they haven't gotten the wins come around yet, but you just kind of have a feeling, it's like, oh, it's going to come soon.
Yeah, I think a lot of what's been lost throughout the NIL, the transfer portal, all of that is just the love and the care for the game, especially with your own team. And what Ryan Pedin has done is he's made a lot of guys buy in. A lot of guys on this team, they could have transferred out, but he kept them here too. So I feel like he's just made a lot of people care more about not just themselves, but the team in general, the program, and everything that he's done right now has been going upwards.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, what other coach is just going to wear a jersey and shorts when it's negative 20 degrees outside and tell you to come to games? Like, Pedin, not only does he love this team, but he loves the community. And you can just tell, like, he has a vision for where this team is going to go, and he's trying to build it. And if he keeps doing things like this, like the wins and the success and the fan culture, it's just going to keep amounting to something special.
I think we're currently, like, building off, at least ourselves, are kind of talking about the highs of last night. But obviously, there has been some lows for this team, and I think one of the lows was, since we talked to you, they played on Saturday at Bradley. And Joey, I know you could go more into it. I watched the game as well, but you were there in person. Just a tough loss overall to Bradley. A game that almost feels like you could have won.
I mean, it's the second year in a row where we traveled to Peoria and we went 10-minute stretches without scoring, and it still was a single-digit game by the end of it. It's just, you just score in those simple moments, and, like, that's a game you can win. And I know it just stings, but, I mean, the crowd was loud there. Illinois State was clearly rattled by 9,000 fans that were roaring. It was an incredible atmosphere, as much as I hate to give the Braves that credit, but it's just, they lose these games, as Jordan said, like, they're still close margins, like, they stay in these games. It's just, at some point, they're going to knock on that door and open it and win these close ones. But yeah, the shooting was awful. The shooting was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, efficiency matters so much, and we've seen what this team can do. They can make a lot of threes, they can drive to the rim, they can play very aggressively. But when you go up against the big teams and you're just not efficient like normal, you're just not going to do well around tournament play. You're not going to do well around the games that matter, a.k.a. like this Belmont game. They won it, but those end of the game's efficiency, that's going to get to you at some point. So they need to just play as efficient as possible from here on out.
I mean, I kind of think the Belmont story was a little bit opposite, where they just started the first half awful. I think they shot 4 of 25 from 3 to start off that game, and then shot 8 of 16 in the second half, and that's really what helped them kind of flip the switch and get that 14-point lead at some point. But this team is such a three-point heavy shooting team, as Julian said, you got to be efficient with that. When you're shooting 4 of 25, that's just, you're not going to win games like that. So being efficient is just so crucial.
Next time they'll play Bradley will be in CEFQ.
I'll be at the call. I'll be on the call, by the way.
February 19th, 7 p.m. Super excited for that one. But let's just take a quick look. We were talking about it with Jordan, obviously. But this weekend, just a huge day, I think, for the community, for the basketball program itself. We saw the new court. The new court looks absolutely gorgeous. Doug Collins court, you got a signature on there. And really, on Saturday, as much as it's about winning a game, it's Doug's day, and I know that the team is probably going to approach it like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Pedin just gave so much love to Doug in the press conference afterwards, saying he hasn't seen alumni care about his school throughout Pedin's whole tenure, just everywhere. Like, even though Doug Collins has just been historically great, he still has so much passion for this community. And Pedin even says he sees this guy as a father figure. So that's just how much he cares about Illinois State, and it's going to be his day. And I could only imagine the adrenaline that's going to be rushing through those players when he makes that entrance. Like, they are going to want to win that game by a ton of points.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way that a team can get more riled up than seeing a Hall of Fame player in their court at halftime getting a ceremony more than just him. I mean, he's pretty much what ISU is. He's the epitome of a Redbird, and I feel like the players are just going to play two times as hard just seeing him out there.
I know everybody is excited to try and acquire one of those Doug Collins jerseys. Everyone wants one. But in the meantime, if you can't make it to the game, catch the call live here on WZND starting at 3:50 against Valparaiso for Doug Collins Day. When we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to be talking some NBA basketball. Stay right here. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster here to talk some NBA basketball and some latest developments in the league. The soap opera that we all love, that is the NBA. just another season of just drama and trades and everything as we get closer to the trade deadline and All-Star break. I think it's been a weird year overall. I think some things have gone unexpected, like the Cleveland Cavaliers being 38-9, some teams failing to win games, like the Philadelphia 76ers, the Golden State Warriors are struggling. It's just been, I think it's been a weird year for the league, and I kind of just want to cover all the drama that has come out, like, in the last couple weeks, especially as we get closer to the NFL being done. So sad. We'll talk more about the NFL and the big game coming up in 15 minutes. But for now, we're going to talk some NBA. And I think the biggest topic of interest right now is the Jimmy Butler saga. What a saga this has been for a guy that brought the Miami Heat to two finals, which just still, that doesn't feel real.
No.
It doesn't. Isn't that crazy? I know the one was the Mickey Mouse bubble tournament, whatever, but like the fact that he's brought the Heat to the finals twice, it's actually insane. And, you know, apparently Jordan Davis thinks that he's coming to the Bulls. I don't know about that one, but either way, the Jimmy Butler saga has been really something interesting to follow, especially as he's just making a mockery out of it.
Yeah, I mean, for any Miami Heat fan that is mad at Jimmy Butler right now, that is just mad that all this is going on right now, I mean, you're crazy. You had this dude bring you to two finals. They've been close. I mean, like, obviously you want to win one, but he's not LeBron. He's not Dwayne Wade. But I've seen a stat that he's like top 10 or so multiple times with his, I think it's per game. He has like top 10 per game for like points scored in the playoffs. So a guy like Jimmy Butler, I think he changes a lot of franchises, but it has to be the right type of franchise because you're dealing with a guy. Like you're dealing a lot with drama, you're dealing a lot with just like what he wants versus what he thinks is right for the team. So I think Jimmy Butler changes a franchise, but it has to be the right one.
I mean, at what point does this get annoying? I'm just going to be honest. Like when Jimmy Butler was in his prime and it was just being annoying during like Timberwolves practices, you know, team with the third string, like, haha, this is kind of funny. And now it's like 8 years later, he's like 35. He's like doing the same nonsense. It's like, bro, like it's not funny anymore. Like I used to enjoy it, but I don't think Jimmy Butler's kind of in the position to be acting like this anymore. And if I'm a team, like, I'm just really not that interested in trading for Jimmy Butler.
How much of it do you think is Jimmy Butler right now versus this Pat Riley? Because I think a lot of it's Pat Riley.
I think a lot of it is Pat Riley. Because he wants an extension, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so crazy. It's so weird. I will say, from my brother's perspective, resident Miami Heat fan.
Is he a Jags fan, too?
Yeah. He loves South Florida teams and the Cubs. I know. It's
good for him.
Mix.
Good for him.
I mean, he's going through a lot right now. Like, you got Duval. they made the right hire. And then you got Jimmy Butler just having a crash out. Where was I going with this, though? Oh, he understands why Jimmy Butler wants out. He has a full understanding of why he wants out. And I think that's what a lot of Heat fans are at this point are like. Like, the team is struggling. They are barely holding on to a spot that's not the play-in, which I still think the play-in is like the dumbest thing of all time. But
I agree.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just a weird situation in Miami. I think the craziest part about this, though, is the fact that Kevin Love is like tuning in on social media.
You guys, he's so funny.
He's so out of pocket. You can just tell like Kevin Love is like the ship is sailing for him as well. And I'm assuming like Kevin Love and Jimmy Butler are like best friends on the Heat or something. Cause every time something happens with Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love just posts a meme on Instagram about it. Like, don't you guys all play together? And it was like me over Haywood Highsmith. Is that his name? It's like, it's crazy. The NBA, as I said, Mikey always called it a soap opera. It is the truth. Like, out of all the sports leagues, there's just never a dull moment.
Yeah, no, it's just drama filled, and we're so lucky Paul George isn't on this team. Could you imagine how many podcasts would have been made about this? Like, it'd be ridiculous. That's kind of like, I guess that's like Kevin Love's approach on it. It's like, oh, let's have a podcast. Let's just make memes about it. But I don't even think the Heat are doing that bad. I mean, they're always in the play-in race every year, and then just tend to win games. And they've shown promise. Like, Khalil Ware is rookie of the year as of this moment. He's been incredible. I wanted him to be a Bull so bad, but he's not, unfortunately. It's just, they finally converted Bam to not be a center anymore. Like, there's still promise here. And my hot take is I think they get better when they get rid of Butler.
I mean, how long could you go without trading him, though? Because they've had him.
I mean, deadline's approaching.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they've honestly just hurt themselves more, I feel like, this not trading him yet versus doing it.
Because someone's going to trade for him.
They've suspended him, like, three times now.
Yeah,
so, like, what's
indefinitely
the
now.
What's it the was point a, to keep having that on?
I mean, the craziest was, like, when this whole saga started, he, like, the last game he played before the whole saga started, and he like came on his press conference like, I don't want to be here anymore. You could tell he was like purposely throwing the game. His like plus minus that day was like minus 30 or something like that. It was crazy.
Yep.
All right, let's do this. Jimmy Butler predictions. Where does he go? I mean, we're still probably going to keep following the saga until the trade deadline in February, but I'm going to say he goes to Phoenix.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'm going to ball my eyes out when the Bulls trade for Bradley Beal. It's going to be the most depressing thing that ever happened in my life.
I think he goes to Golden State. And yeah, then I saw, I think a three-team trade could be in place for Wiggins going back home to Toronto.
Interesting.
Wow, that team will be boring.
Yeah. Wait, Toronto or Golden State?
Toronto.
Well, both, I think. I mean,
Wiggins and Barnes. Yeah, yeah. And what, Kelly Olynyk?
somebody's getting some points up. Somebody's getting a contract.
Yeah, someone's got
somebody's
a score.
Getting a contract.
There's a lot of sagas going on in the NBA right now, and I think another big one that a lot of people did not expect was the fact that De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings, their franchise player, multi-time All-Star, De'Aaron Fox is apparently on the trade block as the Sacramento Kings somewhat continue to struggle 24-23, barely 24-23, barely holding on to that 10 seed for the play-in tournament. I'm not going to lie. Even though Sacramento has been struggling this year, I did not expect them to throw De'Aaron Fox's name in trade talks, but I guess they want to restart the franchise yet again.
I mean, this house is just on fire. Sacramento has just been a joke of a franchise. You move on from Tyrese Halliburton to build around Fox, and then you're going to trade Fox. And then Fox says, I don't want to be coached with Mike Brown anymore. So then you fire Mike Brown just to trade De'Aaron Fox. What in the world is going on? It doesn't really make sense. And what's funny to me is if you look in this play-in race, there's a team that's three and a half games behind them, and that's probably where De'Aaron Fox is going to end up in San Antonio.
I mean, I think that the Kings itself right now, a lot of it reminds me of how the Bulls also went through with DeMar DeRozan. You think it's going to work out, it doesn't work out, but they're doing the right thing and just getting rid of everything. I hope they're getting rid of DeMar too, if they're getting rid of De'Aaron, but if you're going to make a move like this, you do need to get the best package possible, and I don't know if that's going to be what's going to happen now, because he kind of said he wants to go to San Antonio. They might get fleeced, but if Stephon Castle is somehow in that trade, which he should not be, then they're going to win it.
Yeah, they're going to trade for Keldon Johnson, who's one of my least favorite players in the NBA, and it's very fitting for Sacramento because I will never watch them. But when the Spurs, when they get a lineup out there of De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan, and Victor Wembanyama, they are going to be such a horrifying team to watch for the next 10 years because they are going to be so good at the game of basketball.
Who was their draft pick this year? Sorry.
Stephon Castle.
Okay, okay.
And they also had Dillingham and traded him to the T-Wolves.
Yeah, but you know how many picks the Spurs are going to have now potentially? Because they have the Hawks first round pick, which is going to plummet because everybody's hurt. And if the Bulls do Bulls things and don't finish in the top 10 but still don't make it in the playoffs, they get that pick as well. So the Spurs can have 3 picks in the lottery this year. So they have trade assets. Who knows what they keep as well?
Let's talk about the Bulls.
Yes.
Team,
let's go.
The Chicago Bulls, 20-28
viewership
on the season.
Plummets.
And yeah, right. And guess what? They are the 10th seed in the East right now.
Yeah.
Round of
what
applause.
Do we expect?
Yeah. What else? Like, what? We knew this was coming.
Green.
And guess what? If they don't have a top 10 pick, they don't get it.
Nope.
It's incredible what Jerry Reinsdorf and Arturis Karnovis and this front office has been able to build. And it seems like after years of fans begging, after just a failed, a failed team that we thought was pretty promising, it seems like it's all going to fall apart as a report came out that everybody is available besides their first-round pick this year in Matas Bezelis. And honestly, it's probably the right move.
It is, and I'm going to try really hard to keep my composure here, so I'm sorry if I get a little bit emotional. But if Coby White's the one we move on from, I really don't know how I'd react. Like,
but
I
he's
think
the one with the most value. That's the problem.
If you trade one, you got to trade all. That's how I feel about it.
Are you defending getting rid of Coby White?
Well,
that's our franchise.
I'm not defending getting rid of Coby White, but also this draft is very guard-heavy. And if we're going to be trading for a pick in this draft, being at the top 10, I would not mind trading Coby White if we know for a fact we're going to get a top 10 pick out of it, which we won't because the deadline's right here, and we're also the 10th seed.
I think you can trade on everybody but Coby White. I think Coby White's just one of those faces you can build around with Bouzelis, and Coby White loves the city as well. But Levine and Vooch, they should have been traded 2 years ago. I'm surprised they're still here. But my question for you guys, because we've kind of heard rumors about these guys getting traded for the past couple of years. What do you do if the Bulls just do what they do best, is do continuity and don't trade any of these guys?
I already expect that. I've seen it for the last 3 or 4, but what was the year that they were really good? 2021 now? Mm-hmm. We're in the year 2025. Like, it, or
oh
maybe it was
God.
20. No, it was 21. We were freshmen. That is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's just, I'm just used to it at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, playing tournament every year, bring it to me. We're going to lose a first round pick off the DeMar DeRozan trade. I'm pretty, don't the Spurs get our pick?
Yeah, they do.
It's unbelievable.
They're going to have three lottery picks.
It's unbelievable.
To pair with
this
Wemby.
Team has been able to do or not be able to do. I will say though, in terms of, trades for the Bulls, I think it is positive. I like Zach LaVine. I'm a big fan of Zach LaVine. I know some people have kind of like turned the ship on him, but at least he is building some valid like trade value leading up to this deadline, because since the year has turned 2025, pretty sure he's been like one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah, and I cannot agree more, but guess what? We're going to trade for Bradley Beal. Is that not so backwards? Like, that doesn't tank. That doesn't improve anything. Nah, we're going to trade poop for diarrhea.
He's going to get so much better because he played with Billy Donovan in college, and that matters
so much,
right?
I don't
really want
to
hear.
Can we turn out his microphone? Don't let the listeners listen.
He's
to
the
that,
one that
man.
Controls it.
Crap.
It's sarcasm. I could go on for probably at least an hour just hating on the Bulls, ranting about the Bulls. Like, we all know who the problem is with the Bulls. It's the ownership. Like, I could just rant about that, but I won't go that hard.
And the biggest thing is, it's hard to watch because you just don't, you know what to expect with a team that has all-stars on it. Like, you could argue that the Bulls have three, like, borderline all-stars this year in Vucevic, Zach LaVine, and Kobe White, and they just aren't good. Like, it's different than, like, the, I'm going to bring hockey, in the Blackhawks situation. Like, we know the Blackhawks are going to be bad, but at least it's fun to watch these young guys develop. For the Bulls, it's like, one young guy is developing, and yeah, I think Matas, like, he's going to be in the dunk contest, which is cool to see, and it's been cool to see how he's developed throughout the year as a young player, but it's just, he barely starts. He only gets minutes basically in garbage time, and it's just, it's a bore to watch. And don't even get me started on Patrick Williams.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring his name up. Patrick Williams has made me hate the game of basketball. I'm just going to say it. Like, I try and, like, I go on League Pass. I watch a Thunder game. Like, oh, this is so enjoyable. And then I watch Patrick Williams shoot, like, 2 of 9 and get 3 rebounds, not play defense. So he's supposed to be a defensive guy. And then Billy Donovan will see it, like, Bouzelis, you keep the bench warm. Patrick Williams, he's going to come around. This, the year 6 glow up will happen. It's so sad. I hate this team so much.
I think it's bad when Modest himself came out yesterday saying, like, I'm not going to get better if I'm not playing against the best. I mean, he said that himself. And Billy Donovan hasn't developed any young talent whatsoever. So why is he just still in Chicago?
Isn't that a great question?
I don't get it.
Isn't that like with an every Chicago sports team at this point? I mean, granted, the Bears might be headed in the right direction. The Blackhawks fired their coach midseason. Why don't we just do it with Billy Donovan at this point? Just get rid of it. But I have a feeling he's going to be around for at least
a while.
Yeah.
Jerry ain't opening the paycheck.
Nope.
Oh, man. Well, the Chicago Bulls continue to be a dumpster fire. The NBA will continue to bring you more updates as football goes away, and we continue to follow the soap opera that is basketball. But when we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to be talking NFL, everything that happened last week, and a little preview of the big game as well. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster recapping last week's NFL slate as it was conference championship weekend. We talked about it the week earlier. We are 1 week away from the big game. It cannot come soon enough between the Chiefs and Eagles, but we want to talk more about the games that happened last weekend and everything that came about with them. We'll start with the NFC Championship in what was a dominating performance by the Philadelphia Eagles over the Washington Commanders, and just winning on all sides of the ball, kind of like we talked about the week previously. We said, you know, they have one of the best defenses in the game, and we just wanted to see some more out of Jalen Hurts with his arm. And granted, we did see that. He looked really good. But, man, that run offense, the Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts, it is a scary duo on offense.
Yeah, have you ever, like, known a game's just over, like, 8 minutes into it? Because the Commanders, they go on, like, this big drive. They make the statement. They get a bucket. And Saquon Barkley just takes it, like, 60 yards on the opening play for the Eagles. Right when that happened, I was like, yeah, this one's over.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody honestly thought the Commanders were even going to be close in this game, I thought that was crazy. The Eagles have been
so
dominant.
Did you pick the Commanders?
No.
I thought you did.
No, I had the Eagles going to the championship God knows how long, yeah. But Saquon Barkley, I know this is not a running back award or anything, but he should be right up there with them for MVP.
I think he should. Like, it is shown throughout these playoffs, like, he is the MVP. Mm-hmm. Like, legitimately, if Saquon Barkley wasn't there, I still think the Eagles would be a really good team, but he has taken them to a different level, just what he's able to do with his legs. And granted, it helps that he has the best offensive line in football that gets the block behind him or in front of him. But man, what he's done, it has just been one of the best seasons to watch ever out of any player. And it's just been awesome, especially for a guy like Saquon, who just seems like the nicest, most stand-up guy. And he just kind of just wasted his career away in New York. Like, imagine he was on Philly for all these years. He'd be one of the greatest players of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could not agree more. It's just, especially with all the injury issues he's having, it's like, oh yeah, the Eagles are going to offer him this like paycheck, but like, is he just even going to be healthy? Is he going to get hurt right away? And he's just able to stay healthy. And this is the Saquon we were expecting coming out of Penn State.
I think a lot of it also with this team is their defense has gotten way better than it used to be in previous years. Their DBs used to suck. Now they have Cooper DeJean and they have Quinyon Mitchell, who are two of the best, not only DBs in this draft class, but players in general. And then you got them back there paired up with Reed Blankenship in the back with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Yep. Like, this whole defense at every single level is dominant. And the player I'm going to say that I really wish that we had, Jalen Carter, he's going to be a top defensive tackle in this league for at least the next decade.
He's a game wrecker. And the craziest part is, I know he's old, but he was still such a crucial part of this Eagles defense. Brandon Graham hasn't played since midseason, and they just didn't skip a beat. And it, you know, like, it has the feeling of that Philadelphia team from a couple years ago, which sure enough, it's crazy that they're playing the Chiefs yet again. But it's just like to a whole different level just because they have that one X factor, and that's Saquon Barkley. He is just able to take over a game, and do what Jalen Hurts is able to do with his legs. Like, you never know what to expect out of this Philadelphia offense. And like, the craziest thing is like, especially after last year, they had Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, and the offense, the defense took a significant step back. But really, for Coach Sirianni and his staff, like, I feel like it has just been a revival year for, you know, a franchise and a league that was calling for Sirianni's job last year. It's just crazy. Like, this is a really good team in the NFL, and they're going to be along for a really long time.
I just don't really see that how this team can have an off year next year, especially going after this year. They got all these guys under contract still. A lot of them are just young guys who are going to keep on getting better. Nick Sirianni just saved his job this year. I mean, I also, last year I thought he was going to be on the coach, like,
yeah, I don't even know why it was a question, though. He brought him to the championship not even a year earlier. Like, it's more just like Philadelphia fans being overreacting and the media itself as well. But still, it was a question.
And I feel like they're not even using two of their best weapons, being an A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith.
I know.
Like, in the big game, they will. But
I don't want to get too much into the big game talk, but before we start talking about another game that took place, I just need to show love to this Commanders team, though.
Yeah,
because 100%. I know we're been dogging them a little bit, but the story of this team was incredible. Almost zero expectations. And then Jaden Daniels just completely changed my life this year. I'm not going to lie. I owe that man everything. I got my first fantasy football championship because of him.
Look at that.
And he ended that annoying Detroit Lions fan base that was, Ben Hootie's quotes, the team of destiny. Team of destiny didn't make it out of the division. We'll get that garbage out of my face. So the Detroit Lions legacy is done, and he won me a lot of money in fantasy football for the championship. This team is incredible. The pairing of him and Terry McLaurin, what a special duo that I hope continues to build off this season.
And it's just Dan Quinn. I don't know if I've said this out of Red Zone, but something about Dan Quinn, ever since he lost that big game to the Falcons, ever since he's left the Falcons, and he went to go be the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys, and he turned that hat backwards, and he's just on the sideline doing crazy gestures. It's like a whole new aura, and he's an incredible coach in this league, and he was able to turn around a Commanders team that, granted, yes, they had the number 2 overall pick in the draft, and everyone was super excited to see what the Heisman winner could do. He's going to run away with the Rookie of the Year, but it's just the fact that he was able to turn around an entire culture, new ownership, new GM, and, you know, they made a couple nice offseason signings with Bobby Wagner. Let me tell you, this Commanders team is not going anywhere. Like, the Eagles should be very worried about where this team's headed. They have the fourth most salary cap in the league this year. They're going to go get a solid number 2 for Jaden Daniels, because Terry, you know, Zacchaeus and Diami Brown were fine, but you need a number 2 to line up with them. Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler are a great 1-2 punch in the back. And, I mean, that defense, a lot of guys that you don't really know, but it's young, and they're only going to get better.
Yeah, I want to get into that talk some more, but first, Ben Hootie just made history and is the first ever person to say Dan Quinn has aura. So I just want to congratulate you, Ben Hootie. I've never heard that before. Congratulations on making that statement. But I really hope they get T. Higgins. That's my takeaway. I want them to get him this offseason, because if you get the trio of Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin, and T. Higgins, you're just a powerhouse in the NFC.
I think a lot of people don't talk about their defensive side of the ball, especially Frankie Louvu. He's one of the best middle linebackers in the league right now. And honestly, he came out of nowhere. A lot of people didn't really expect him to be exactly what he was. But without him on this defense, Daron Payne had a little bit of iffy year figuring the contract. He honestly saved this defense, especially from the inside.
It was an impressive season by the Commanders, and they're not going away at all. And it's kind of scary considering the fact that, like, the Bears are on the rise in the NFC, but so are the Commanders. I know it's cross-divisional, but, like, this is a team that they're going to be around for a while, and they're not going anywhere. Let's talk about two teams that have just been tearing up the league for the last, you know, what has it been, 5, 6, 7 years at this point. One of them, we already know, this Kansas City Chiefs. But let's talk about the Buffalo Bills first and just really this game in general. Just another heartbreaker for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, their kryptonite, 32-29 in a classic game. And really just, you got a feel for Josh Allen and the Bills, man. It's getting really sad just watching them walk off the field to the Kansas City Chiefs every year at this point.
I know that there are a lot of questionable calls in that game, but I don't really think that game really had that many questionable calls. The only one that I thought was questionable was the Xavier Worthy catch.
Okay.
Other than that,
what about the first down?
I didn't think he actually got the first
down. You don't think so?
No. You can't see the ball, I feel like.
It was a tough call.
It's like that call. If they made it on the field that it was a first down, yes, it's a first down. If they didn't, then you can't. It was so close, you can't overchange it.
I mean, I'm just starting to get really worried for Josh Allen's legacy. I know this is kind of freaky to think about, but like, at what point are we going to be like 15 years from now, he wasn't able to beat the Chiefs, and it's like, this is just like another like Philip Rivers guy. And I really don't want Josh Allen to be in that echelon, because he's in so many MVP races, but he loses that to Lamar, and then like, oh, maybe he'll make it to the big game, and then he loses to Mahomes. Like, at what point is Josh Allen's legacy just going to be tarnished? Like, I feel so bad for him, because he is such a great football player, and he is so enjoyable to watch.
Can we call him the DeMar DeRozan of...
No.
Too many years. And that's what I was talking to people the other day. I was like, it feels like it's just this Kansas City Chiefs, like, domination is never going to end. But I, like, in my heart, like, I can just feel, like, one day, Lamar, Josh Allen, like, they're going to hoist that Lombardi. Apparently, it might be the Brady. Did you guys hear about that? Belichick wants to change it to the Brady Trophy?
Yeah.
Kind of awesome. Either way, I think they're going to be hoisting it up. But one thing I do want to touch on, and we're going to have a ton of big game coverage next week, probably do 30 minutes of it, honestly, just because it's such a big deal. Not just for sports, but nationally. I am sick and tired of people saying, oh, I'm not going to want this, the big game that nobody wanted. This, you know what? This is exactly the big game that I wanted. Like, this is, like, you can't write a better script in terms of how often do you see two quarterbacks, two coaches, like, almost identical teams rematch each other in a championship. We see it obviously in NBA and everything like that, but in terms of football, it feels like you hardly ever see it. I love this matchup. I think it's awesome that we're running it back.
Yeah, and I'm excited for it too. Like, I know this Chiefs team gets a lot of garbage from the media, but like, I remember like when the Patriots were on the run, how much like I hated Tom Brady. But then it ended, I was like, oh man, Tom Brady was awesome.
Yeah.
What he did for the sport was insane. And we're going to do the same thing with the Chiefs. That's why I try to enjoy it in the moment, because I don't want to do the same thing where I was just hating on the Patriots and ended up liking it. Like, I want to enjoy what's going on. This Chiefs team is so dominant. What Mahomes and Travis Kelce have done for the sport is incredible, and I can't wait for some good football next Sunday.
Yeah, I understand that the last big game ended up in a Hail Mary that the Chiefs won, but this one, I just see it being an even better matchup. I mean, both these teams are so much better now. You got a good matchup against Travis Kelce with two high safeties that are both very good in man coverage. But also, I think it's going to be more of that grit pit run ball, just try to like beat the inside type of game. Because Chris Jones versus Jalen Carter, those are two of the best attacks in the game. And I feel like if you get past that level, then your team's looking very good. But if you don't, then both the teams are screwed on the run game.
I mean, I just hope Jalen Hurts doesn't have to throw a Hail Mary again, because that almost lost him his job when he threw it 30 yards. And I just hope this game comes down to Barkley, because you can make an argument it's the most exciting player in football.
And that's the big I talked about in the Commanders thing and how this Eagles team's different. That's the X factor. We're looking at two almost identical teams. I think the Eagles' defense has gotten exponentially better since they were last played the Chiefs. But once again, it is Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, you cannot count them out. And kind of I want to go back to what Joey said earlier. It's like similar to what you said with the Brady thing, I am learning to, like, just respect it and live in the moment. I'm tired of the media, like, trying to spew it, like, oh, they got the refs on their side, all this. I don't care. We said the same thing for Brady. Like, it's just a team that is nationally hated. And granted, I'm just here to live in the moment and respect Patrick Mahomes and what the Chiefs have been able to do, because it has been incredible to watch.
I mean, it's really hard, I feel like, from – I think as older people now that we've seen a generational quarterback like that, we accept it more. I think it's more the younger generation, like, that don't really accept it as much, because we witnessed Tom Brady win however so many times against however so many teams. But now Patrick Mahomes, he's beating the same team. He's beating the same teams on both sides, even the AFC and the NFC. So I feel like it's very hard to make up a GOAT conversation right now. But Mahomes is really right there with them. But Tom Brady will always be able to say that he beat him in the big one.
Once again, we will have plenty of big game coverage next week as we get even closer to the NFL championship between the Chiefs and Eagles. We're so excited to bring that to you. Once again, a special thank you to Jordan Davis for coming on the Red Zone this week. And once again, we will have plenty of Redbird coverage and especially the big game next week here on the Red Zone every week from 6 to 7. Thank you so much for joining. We'll be right back.